Hey, welcome to Divorce for Busy Millennials, a place where you can get the scoop on what it's like to go through a divorce through candid conversations. Hello, just a quick reminder, this is a podcast about divorce. So I will be talking about some very specific legal issues and terminology. Just want to be clear, just because I'm an attorney and we're talking about legal stuff, I don't want anyone to construe things that I say as legal advice or creating an attorney-client relationship. This is just an advice podcast between two professionals and talking about different topics. So if you have any questions about that, please feel free to reach out through social media or email. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Erica. This is always the weirdest part because I talk to people before I start the interview and I'm like, well, then there you go. All right. So today I'm interviewing Erica Westcott, who is a loan officer for Movement Mortgage, Movement Finance?
Movement Mortgage.
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassing. So, Erica and I met because we share, we have offices in the same building. Even though I'm moving soon, but I wanted to get this in before I move. I know, I'm kind of sad about it.
I feel like I just made a new friend. You're going away.
You can hang out at the new office.
Okay.
It's very picturesque. So, Erica has been in Gadsden since she was 7 years old. She graduated.
See how long that is.
I intentionally didn't ask.
I like that.
She's a graduate of Auburn University. You've probably heard of it. After a brief stint, a couple years, you said, in Birmingham, she moved back to Gadsden, and this is where she's raised her family. So she has three kids, two girls and a boy. She's a music lover, and she grew up very active in her community theater, which I need to get my daughter into.
Yes, you do. It's so awesome.
Get her out of her little shell.
Yes.
Her middle child is has the natural musical gift, and she uses that to lead worship at church. Her oldest is her son. He's super laid back and wants to be a coach and a teacher one day.
That's right, yes.
And her youngest is the natural athlete, and I cannot believe you said she's 6 feet tall. I always wanted to be 6 feet tall, and I just petered out at 5'9".
Yeah.
And she plays competitive volleyball. Yes. So one of Erica's life goals is to have a women's ministry, and to focus on bringing self-awareness and self-value for women, especially after they go through a divorce, which anyone listening to this podcast can relate to. So she started in finance after college, and she got into the mortgage business when she was 25 years old. So in 1998, her company let her open a satellite office here in Gadsden, where she built one of the largest mortgage companies here in Gadsden, Alabama. And if you're not from here, you know, it's a pretty sizable little town. Like, you know, our little towns around us were at, like, what, 30,000 with Gadsden? With the towns around Gadsden and Etowah County in general, we're sizable.
Yeah, I think we're 100.
It's a decent. So for the last 10 years, she's focused on leading a production staff and coaching junior loan officers. So a little bit of what we talked about is just her penchant for leading and coaching people and her love of doing that. All right. Well, welcome. And so today we're talking about buying a home after a divorce, which is a major pain point for a lot of people.
It is.
And what we talked about kind of before we started the interview was just like buying a home is a significant emotional event.
Yes, for sure.
And I can attest to the fact that I bought my first home when I moved to Gadsden, so 2016, and that was in 2016, and it was a whole different ballgame than buying a home as a divorcee in 2022.
Absolutely.
So big changes, yes. Big difference in the process for me. And I was like, oh no, I don't remember it being this hard before, but yeah. The economy is different.
It is. And that's a major, probably a major part of it.
And everything about it was different. The prices were
definitely
insane. Absolutely definitely. Insane. I don't think I've talked about it on here because I took a break from the podcast, but I really wanted to stay in the house that uh-huh. I had been renting. Uh-huh. And I'd been renting it for 2 years, uh-huh. and I adore my neighbors. Uh-huh. Like, I just, aww. I lived between family members, like a mother and her daughter. And
so you were part of the family.
Yes. So I always felt so like, and they're just so kind and loving, and I just felt like so cared for, you know, and safe, and I loved helping them with stuff.
Well, that's neighborhood.
I know, I had a great neighborhood, so I wanted to buy that house, and the owner, like, I made an offer, and he was like, he made an offer like $150,000 more than that, and I was like, sir.
Yes.
Like, I was like, sorry, I don't think you've walked through this house lately, but it was not taken care of before mm-hmm. I got here, you know?
Right, right.
So I was real sad. That was like a big issue.
Well, moving is so emotional. It's so emotional.
It's like, I love to move. So I, you've in the moved Army, a lot. I move sure. a lot.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit like icky. Uh-huh. Like, I've been here for too long.
Yeah.
And I feel that all the time. And I know that sounds weird, but I'm like, it's time to go.
See, that's so funny. I feel weird. I've lived in my house for 16 years.
Oh, my God.
And I can't imagine, like, as long as I live in Gadsden, I will live in that house. And when the house I grew up in, my parents were there for 22 years. So, like, I had the house I grew up in, my first house that I bought when I came back here, which I stayed in maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
Then the house I lived in before the house I live in now, and I was there 8 years. So, it's so funny how different we are like that.
I moved a lot when I was young. Uh-huh. I think like 8 houses uh-huh. before I was 9.
Wow.
I grew up with a single mom, and my mom was really young.
Yeah.
So like moving to a new house, and I think she made it like exciting.
It's kind of fun.
So I was like, oh my God, new room.
That's
I get to go in a new room.
That's, you know? Yes.
And then, you know, I went into the Army. Uh-huh. And moving all over the place, and I was like, cool. The transient life is for me.
Yes.
But I've been here since August of 2016.
I mean, so that's a good long time.
It's the longest I've lived in one place.
6 years. You know?
But I still feel like I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And I talked to, like, my best friend from college lives in Idaho. Uh-huh. And she was in the Army, too. And the other day, we were, like, talking, and I was like, we have lived in our current places for, like, over 5 years, and that's the longest either of us have lived
that's
in one place.
That's so neat.
And both of us were like, I still feel a little weird about it. But like her and her boyfriend or partner, really, they've been together so long. They're partners at this point, right? They bought a house, and then they bought like an orchard next to it and land. And I was like, you have like a whole homestead.
Well, you
out
can't
there.
Leave an orchard.
I know. I was like, Christina, you have like a lot going on. Like me, so I just got my little house.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like, it's so crazy. But anyway, sorry, I'm on a sidetrack because. Like I said, significant emotional event. So, okay, I kind of want to start off general.
Okay.
Because, like, we talked, like, people don't understand the process.
That's right.
And I know going into buying a house, I honestly didn't remember anything I learned from the first experience.
Sure.
I do think it's a little bit like having a child.
It is.
Like, you go through it, and then
forget it.
Your brain is like, that was traumatic.
Yes.
Your brain was like, you know, we're just actually going to focus on being excited about having a house.
And forget the rest.
And we're going to forget all the
that
bad
is,
stuff.
I love that parallel. I'm going to remember that.
You think that's
I'm going to use that with my first time buyers from now on. No, I think you're 100% correct.
So, tell me, like, who are the big parties
okay.
in a loan or
so when you buy a house, you're obviously going to have, if you're getting a mortgage, you'll have your loan officer, who is a major important part. Mm-hmm. If you're working with a real estate agent, which I'm going to go ahead and plug, if you're buying a house for the first time or any time, you need to be working with a realtor. Yes. I promise it's worth it. A lot of people don't understand that when you're the buyer, the seller's paying that commission, that you don't pay commission to the realtor if you're the buyer. But the realtor is the most important person to me in that transaction because they're guiding you not just with your mortgage, but with the attorney, with the home inspection. Their job is monumental there. You've got closing attorneys that are involved. You have home inspectors that are involved, appraisers that are involved. There are a lot of hands in a transaction when you're going to buy a house. Mm-hmm. So knowing that up front, I think, is valuable in learning why. Why do I need a realtor? Well, unless you're experienced with contract negotiation, which you may have been, I don't know, but most people buying aren't, you need a realtor.
I know.
You know, and unless you are a mortgage lender or you've dealt with borrowing money in the capacity to where you've learned this in the last 2 years, you need a really good mortgage lender too, because mm-hmm. the mortgage loan that you got back in 2005, like you learned, those yeah. two separate transactions within 5 years, the industry has changed drastically.
Oh, yeah.
So what was an easy qualification in 2016, maybe not so easy in 22, especially if you've had a huge life change, yeah. which a lot of people don't understand. It's like, well, hey, I bought a house 5 years ago. Sure, I'll go buy one now. But when you have income in the household that changes or employment changes, there are so many different things and different ways that lenders have to look at things mm-hmm. that any change could affect how much you can afford or if you can even get a loan. So yeah. A lot of times I think, especially with a first-time buyer who hasn't experienced this before, they haven't had an experience with a major purchase, or if they have, it's been buying their car.
Yeah.
So they go to the car lot on Saturday, say, I make X amount of dollars. They say, okay, fine, here's your car, go home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people expect their experience with a house to be that way, which couldn't be further from the truth.
It is so
there is such a level of preparedness that needs to be made prior to, oh, I just looked at this house on Zillow and I wanted to make an offer on it today.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of steps that need to be taken. There are a lot of plans that need to be made. There are a lot of exploring and research that needs to be done. And I just think a lot of times the general public doesn't understand that it's so complex.
Yes.
Because it is. So those are going to be your major players.
I will say, now that I am an attorney, and I have survived the bar exam, which for me is a lot of real property.
I can't imagine.
I will say, I do understand the complexity mm-hmm. of the mortgage process mm-hmm. now. Simply just in correlation to the laws in
yes,
place in almost
so
every
many
state.
Regulations.
Because real property is very, it's protected differently.
That's right.
It is passed down differently.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to own real property in a state, it is, I don't want to say it's more responsibility, but it kind of
it is.
It is. Because it is protected and treated
That's
differently
right.
under
it
the
is.
Law
yes.
than, say, a car.
Yes.
Which, you're thinking, I could buy a $100,000
right.
car and, you know, whatever. Well, guess what? When you buy that $100,000 car to get a loan, it doesn't matter.
Right.
The state, which controls everything.
Yeah.
The state doesn't care.
That's right.
It's just the same as having 8, you know, cheap cars.
That's right. That's
I
right.
mean, in the eyes of the
that's
law, it's
right.
like personal property is all one thing. That's why we have real property and personal property.
Right.
And I do understand it more. It doesn't mean that I don't.
It doesn't make it make sense.
Yes.
At all.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it doesn't where I sit, and I've been here a long time.
I just respect the fact that, like,
yes.
the laws that control real property mm-hmm. and how it interacts mm-hmm. with
everything.
Yes,
everything.
Are much more complex.
They are.
And they are meant to protect it, because I don't want to go off on a tangent,
yeah.
but that does get back to our right, like,
That's right.
to own property.
That's right.
That we are allowed to own property in this country.
That's
it's
right.
not. It does not just belong.
That's right.
To
That's
the country.
Exactly right.
We
yes.
as citizens are allowed to
yeah.
own this property, and it's a big deal.
And thank
you
God
know?
For that. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Which
yes.
is, I mean, it's kind of meta for the process, but
right.
like you kind of have to think about it to make
yeah.
it make a little bit of sense
well,
and understand why it's such a big deal.
It seems like, you know, as time has passed, I can remember when I first got into the industry and was buying my own house. I mean, it was pride of ownership was such a huge
yes.
deal. Like, it was the moment of your life to become a homeowner. It was
yes.
such a big deal. And I mean, I think feel like maybe, well, in a lot of different ways we've gotten away from that. But it is still, it's such, I mean, it's an honor. It's a privilege. Not, unfortunately, not everybody's going to qualify
it's
to buy
a privilege.
A house. It is a
yeah.
privilege to own a home.
Yeah,
for
I
sure.
agree. I'm so sorry. So, okay. No, thank you for explaining that because, like, literally, I was Googling that stuff before I was
Behind,
and I was going through my emails, like, randomly, and I came across emails that I was, like, started looking for houses, like, last year, like, June, July. Then I got COVID in July, and I was kind of down for the count, but, yeah, I was like, gosh, it really was, like, a very long process, and we ended up closing, like, kind of the end of October.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, I forgot, that's, like, a half a year, you know?
I think that's another misconception, is the time that it takes for a transaction to go from start to finish.
Oh, yeah.
I'm working with a young, amazing 19-year-old young man right now. I mean, this guy is so impressive, but he was like, you know, how long do you think it's going to take to play this? I was like, probably 30 days. He said, 30 days? And I said, yeah.
That's
and
fast.
He's like, what all do y'all have to do? I was like, look, you don't even want to know. I was like, I'm going to save you that laundry list, but just know 30 days is about the general time it takes from the time you go under contract until we close. So it does. It takes a minute, and I think that's the other misconception that people don't understand is the timing, which when you're going through a marital change, that timing is so crucial.
Mm-hmm.
The timing from the mortgage side, what am I trying to say? I guess where you are in that process.
Yeah.
Have you filed? Have you not filed?
Yes.
Has it been signed off by the judge? Has it not? Mm-hmm. Do you own property together? Do you not? All of those things are so important
mm-hmm.
within that time frame that a lot of times, you know, step B can't happen until step A does.
Yes. And unfortunately, when you're going through a divorce, like, it can drag out.
You just want it to be over.
Yeah. And it can last a long time or it can be kind of short. It depends. But you're 100% right because, like, getting a mortgage for a house, well, like we talked about, it's complex. They're looking at all this stuff. And there's kind of, like, gates, you know? There's kind of, like, a preset timeline mm-hmm. that financial institutions want to stick to and the buyer wants to kind of stick to. But if you're going through a divorce at the same time, like, those timelines might not overlap.
And they're layered on top of each other.
Yes.
And it's intricate. It's
oh,
hard,
yeah.
It's
that
hard
would
to
be
navigate,
so messy.
For sure.
Okay, so can you explain kind of what does a loan officer do?
I would love to. So a loan officer primarily is there to qualify an applicant for a mortgage. So what they're going to look at is a 2-year history for your employment,
mm-hmm.
your residence, go in to review your credit, look at your income. And the loan officer's job is to determine, do I have a prospect to purchase a home or do I not?
Mm-hmm.
That's step number one. And then the loan originator should also be a source of trusted advisory for you, in my opinion. You're advising somebody on the best steps to take because there are a lot of loan products out there. Not every person fits the same loan product.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that a loan originator or loan officer know the products that are available to somebody and then be able to advise them on not just here's where you're going to fit and here's why, but the pros and the cons. Because with every loan product, there are features that are helpful or that are good, and there are features that are not so good, just like life. So knowing those products, being able to communicate the difference between them, and then obviously, you know, give payments and interest rates and explain closing costs. So a lot of it is communication
mm-hmm.
and explaining things. Now, a lot of larger producers work in production teams.
Yeah.
So what exactly the loan officer do may look different from company to company.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I've got a loan assistant, me, and then a processor. So where I talk to the borrower and I'm going to gather the information, I'm going to talk with them about their loan product, give
mm-hmm.
them an interest rate. Anything that has to do with your money,
yeah,
I handle that.
Got you.
Now,
okay.
You had said something earlier about, you know, if you weren't, like, that's where my gift is the communication and the understanding of what needs to happen. Now, you don't want me crossing the T's and dotting the I's because
right. doing the paperwork.
As an extroverted, you know, person, the paperwork may or may not be my strong suit, okay?
Yeah.
So that's why you have production teams. So
right.
where you may not deal with your loan or officer from start to finish the whole time. You may have a team that you know, like, hey, when I get this loan and I submit it to my loan assistant, then she's going to be talking with my borrower for a little while to submit that file to underwriting.
Yeah.
She's going to say, hey, look, I missed a pay stub here, or I need to speak with your employer about XYZ. Mm-hmm. You know, just those little bitty things, and then the process goes on. But as a whole, that whole production team or your loan originator is there to guide you from start to finish, mm-hmm. even though you may hold a few different hands along the way.
Okay. That makes sense to me, and now I'm kind of, like, thinking back, and I'm like, okay, I, like, talk to a few different people in the process.
Yes.
But it's almost like a paralegal and an attorney.
I was going to say a nurse and a doctor. Could you imagine going into the doctor's office and the doctor trying to take your blood?
I know.
You know, or God forbid, weigh you.
I know, like, they would not.
So I always, I try to explain, like, my area of expertise is not where my loan processor's area of expertise is at a much higher level than mine at what she does.
Right.
So you don't want to talk to me about the bank statement you sent and is it acceptable, because Erica does, that's not what Erica does all day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you want to talk to the person who actually has the bank statement, who's going to look at it and say, hey, I've got to send this to the underwriter, and I see you missed page 3 of 5, and hey, I've got to have that.
Yeah.
You know, those sort of things. So different people with different gifts do different things, but as a whole, that team, you know, as long as we communicate too, and I think, and this is, you know, hey, we've got you under contract now. Your interest rate is locked. Here's where your payment's going to be.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm expecting your closing costs to be. And now my next step is to hand you off to my loan assistant. I hate to say hand you off. That's probably...
No,
you
that's
know,
it.
But to match you with my loan assistant. And what she's going to do is get your file ready for the underwriter.
Mm-hmm.
So she may check back with you, hey, I'm missing a date of employment. Or, you know, hey, I have a 2-week employment gap. What were you doing? Did you just take time off? Were you in school? You know, those little bitty filling in the gaps. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it just seems like it works. You meet a lot of people when you're buying a house, because you not only, you know, and in the past, it's like, it's not just me and you know, I mean, the support staff, honestly, they're the unsung heroes, in my opinion, of the whole mortgage process.
For sure, because they're doing
they're doing the paperwork. They're dealing with everybody in the transaction.
Yeah.
Not just the borrower. You know, they're dealing with the attorney's office. They're dealing with the real estate agent. They're dealing with the pest inspector.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people involved in this process that one person can't serve you the best if they're doing everything. Does that make sense?
No, it 100% does. That's also... It's probably why I need a paralegal.
You probably do.
Adding a legal assistant was like a big jump for me.
Yes.
And she's a game changer for me. Because I'm like, don't like talk to her. But that makes 100%.
Yes.
And I think I wish I had understood that better.
Yes.
Granted, I had a great working relationship with my loan officer. And I loved her. And she was... very caring and answered all my questions. So no issues there.
Well,
I do think the first time I bought a house, I definitely did not have a good experience. It was smoother and it was easier because I was married and, you know.
Right.
But I don't think I had a good experience because we use USAA. Because
That communication,
VA
you're
loan
not getting.
And, you know, it wasn't a very personal experience. So I guess this is like shameless plug to go to a local
makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
And I have people that'll call and say, like, I had a friend from church who's moving to Arkansas last week, and she's like, hey, I'm moving to Arkansas. Can you do my loan? And I was like, well, I could, but you won't best be served by me doing it.
Yeah, you want to
ask your realtor.
Mm-hmm.
Who do they work with? You know, because that realtor knows for your specific price point what lenders work well.
Your life situation,
what you're going to be doing. Not to mention the attorneys, the appraisers in that market.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't, if you're outside of a market going into an out-of-state market, if I order an appraisal, they don't care. I mean, it may take 4 weeks to come back, but a lender that's ordering appraisals there every day is going to get turn time that's much more suitable to what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
It is. I think that communication piece is huge.
Yeah.
And especially when those experiences are being had. And to be able to walk in and look at somebody if you have an issue or a question, or knowing that the people that are taking you to the finish line. Your realtor, yeah, in particular, can find that person after 5 p.m.
Yeah, because they...
It's important. It's important.
Because they're, like, playing bunco together, right, on Tuesdays or whatever.
Well, you know, yeah, in the truth of the matter is, you know, most people aren't living in between bankers' hours anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, I don't. Right. You don't. We're right here on the Sunday.
That's right. Yeah.
Which, so, is like, I'm working all the time.
Right, right.
Yeah, I guess that's something I didn't even think about. And I think that would be particularly important, like, after you've done something, like, gone, yeah, through a divorce or had kids or whatever. Like, that personal relationship that I had with my realtor, yeah, and how she was able to match me with people.
That's right.
Like, knowing, you know, I didn't have a lot of extra money, right, to spend. So she was like, you know what, call this guy for your home inspection.
That's right.
He's going to give you a good price. And you know what? He did. And he gave me a military discount. And
see?
He let me pay using Venmo because I said, you know what, sir, I'm so sorry. I left my checkbook at the,
uh-huh,
house.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'll go back. It's 2 minutes away. And he was like, do you have Venmo? I'll just Venmo,
right,
me, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, This is like great service. You know, that's well-rounded customer service.
In the world of instant everything and online everything, there's a lot to be said still for those personal local touches. You still may be doing everything electronically,
yeah,
but knowing you met that home inspector face-to-face and he was like, you know, he's putting a face with a name.
Yes.
And you can't do that if your loan officer's in Massachusetts.
Yes, absolutely. And like, and as a single mom, like, yeah, you know, there was times I had to go into the office and drop,
yes,
stuff off. And guess who was with me? My daughter, you know,
yes,
so,
yes,
they're seeing like, oh, that's
she's a real person.
That's a real child that this woman has to, mm-hmm, clothe and feed,
that's
and
right,
house.
And yeah, I can tell you with certainty, it makes a huge difference when a loan officer meets their client, because,
yeah,
now you're not just you're not an application on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
You have a story.
Yeah.
And it makes it, I hate to say more important, but it just brings the reality of the situation back to why,
yeah,
I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's
oh,
real.
Oh, you know,
it's
she's
real.
Got this daughter, Marilyn, and she needs to be in this house by this date because she starts school.
Yes.
Those sort of things. 100%. You know, those things, I guess they make us want to serve a part, you know, you're,
yes,
looking at
you
somebody
do,
instead of just a piece of paper.
Yes, it's 100. It's,
yeah,
it's real.
Sure.
It makes it so much, mm-hmm, more real to you.
It does.
When
it
you,
does.
Which I mean, I kind of deal with that too. Like,
yeah,
I've had a client, I've met some of my clients' kids, you,
yes,
know, like I had,
yes,
a client come in on a Sunday,
yes,
a couple of months ago and brought her little boy, and, mm-hmm, that's who I'm fighting for.
That's exactly.
And
exactly.
I'm like, I've met this little boy,
yes,
and I've seen him with his mama who he,
mm-hmm,
loves and,
mm-hmm,
didn't want to let go of her. And,
yeah,
I'm like, well, of course I know he wants to be with mom. You know, like, I've seen it myself.
We had,
yeah,
it's been a couple months ago at my old company, but we had a home buyer who he had gone through a really bad divorce.
Oh.
And I don't think he wasn't informed enough of what was going on through the process, that when he went to a house he thought he was closing on to debt together with his wife, he was actually signing a deed that relinquished his property to her.
Mm.
And this wasn't my particular loan, but it was within my office. And
oh, no.
The way my staff, his name ended up being Uncle Billy or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like, he was part of our family when he came in so often. He came in once a week, met with our administrative assistant and the loan processor and the loan officer, to the point when he closed on his loan, the gratitude was something else. But the loan processor, our secretary, and the loan officer went to his closing. They took him balloons and had a party. Like, I squalled. I showed up with my camera just to take pictures because it was the sweetest thing.
So sweet.
Like, it truly... I mean, just from a manager's standpoint,
yeah,
to see my team pouring into a man like that who came in there so broken, it,
yeah,
was the most amazing experience. And you don't get that if you don't meet him.
Exactly. You,
yeah,
really don't.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess this is kind of a vague question,
uh-huh,
but I see this a lot, and
uh-huh,
it's something that I thought about when I was buying a house.
Okay.
So what should a prospective buyer look for in a mortgage company? And I guess we talked about someone local to care for you, but,
yeah,
what else?
And of course, my answer to this is from the mortgage originator standpoint.
Well, that's
what
I want. That's what I want.
The first thing I would say is, don't choose your lender based on an interest rate.
Okay.
Don't choose your lender without seeing a written estimate. Okay. Don't choose your lender without comparing estimates and asking questions. Because what somebody tells you on the phone may look a ton different when it gets on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first thing, is I would not just say, oh, this guy quoted me X rate 4 days ago and you're quoting me this rate today, because rates change daily.
Yes.
And yes, they may be quoting you that rate, but they may be charging you 5 discount points.
Yeah.
You know, so you need to always be sure you're comparing apples to apples. So to me, when you find a mortgage loan officer, mm-hmm. you need to have a level of trust when you're talking to them.
Okay.
Or just some sort of connection that you've established that mm-hmm. you feel like you can trust that person.
Yeah.
I'll also say, don't always work with the first loan originator you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you want somebody that answers the phone.
Yes.
But just because you call 3 people and one answers the phone, don't decide to use them.
Yeah.
If you're going in for brain surgery, are you going to take the first available appointment?
No, you want the best of the best.
You want to give it a
and
little
that doctor
bit of
time. Might be busy at the time.
That's right. And I say all that to say, you know, and a lot of times, just from where I sit, I'll talk to somebody who's been hooked up with an online lender because it was the Super Bowl and they saw an advertisement and they went and applied online. Well, that's great and fine, but what they didn't do was, did they ask you for your pay stubs?
Yeah.
Did you tell them that you were qualifying using overtime and you've only been on that job 2 weeks? These are things that change that situation,
mm-hmm.
and you want to make sure you're having conversations with somebody that is verifying what you're telling them and why. Because what's happening is this: when somebody pre-approves you over the phone,
mm-hmm.
and they send you a pre-approval letter, we're telling your realtor that you're good for that money. And if we haven't reconciled and validated what we're telling them, we're dream crushers.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're going to...
Jackie, you can afford a $500,000 house, and your realtor's out there showing you $500,000 houses, and then 4 days later, I get your pay stubs, and what you thought you made to a lender, you don't make half of. And so now I've said, take that $500,000 taste,
yeah.
and you can qualify for a $150,000 house.
Yeah.
Not only have I done you a disservice, I've done your realtor a disservice, and I've done a disservice to every seller who's out there taking up time in that $500,000 price point to show their home.
And you're not going to get a pool.
Exactly.
You're not getting a pool.
You're not getting a pool now. And so nothing looks good when you're on champagne tasting of your budget, you know?
Yeah.
And so yes. that, to me, is really important, too. I also, like, if I were talking to you and you said, what would the other thing be? I would go online and check reviews. That would be the first thing I would probably do.
Is, okay.
Well, maybe not first, but if I talked to 2 or 3 loan originators, mm-hmm. I would certainly look them up online.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly at least make sure they have some reviews.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, that's suspect to me.
Yeah.
Just like if you're buying anything else. I mean, you know, you want to at least read a few to make sure, oh, this person, you know, and I always look for keywords, because, you know, if somebody says 6 times communication was great, communication's nice, I know mm-hmm. it may not always be immediately, but that person's going to communicate with me. I think that's important.
Yeah.
And I also think that the other thing would be is ask your realtor.
Yeah.
You know, and for they're sure. going to know based on your, like you said, realtors are matchmakers, realtors are therapists.
That's a great way to explain it, a matchmaker.
They are. And so they know, like, they meet you today, they're going to say, oh, she would probably work well with X for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to give you a couple of names. I would call all of them
mm-hmm.
and just try to have a conversation. And you're going to know. I mean, if you call 3 people about the same thing, you're going to connect with one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
And then if the numbers are in line with everybody else, you know, and I kind of would use it as a test is, you know, okay, so I called her and I talked to her and she's pre-approved me now and she's given me an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
But I had 2 other names too. So I'm going to call him lender B and her lender C.
Yeah.
And I don't have to get pre-approved 3 times.
Okay.
I can call lender B and C and say, hey, Mr. Realtor told me to call you. I'm shopping for a mortgage. I've already been pre-approved with lender A,
mm-hmm.
but I would like to get some information on your products and your rates.
Okay.
Could you send me an estimate? Because no lender has to to approve you to send an, to send some sort of
so
estimate.
They can just kind of give you a general overview.
Like my person, if you called me and you said you'd already been pre-approved, I'd say, hey, Jackie, do you know your credit score? Just give me a window of your credit score. If you say, yeah, it's 720, I'm going to say, okay, good. Then I'm going to give you an estimate based on the terms, the sales price and the loan amount that you want based on what I have at a 720 credit score today on an interest rate. And I'm going to email you what's called a closing cost estimate or closing cost worksheet that's going to show you our fees and our rate. Ask lender A for one. Haul your lender C for one.
Yeah.
Put them all together and then look at them. You're not going to know what you're looking at because you don't do this for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
Send them to me. I'm going to review them all. And if lender A has a better loan for you, I'm going to tell you to go use lender A because this is your money. And what good am I doing you if I'm not saying go use who's, what's best for you?
Yes.
So I think, you know, and here's the thing. If you've been in this business for a long time, I know in Gadsden, Alabama, if I can't do this particular loan or I can't give you the best loan for this condo you're buying because I'm not really a condo lender, I may not have the best product, but I know where to send you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. You know your competition.
Yes, I do. Peers. And I know them well. Like, you know, if you need a construction loan, I'm not your girl, but I know exactly where to send you. And I think sometimes, you know, people get into, I mean, every business is competitive. But if your heart is right and you're looking toward the best, I don't have a problem sending you down the street to get a construction loan because when your friend goes through a divorce and they need a mortgage loan, you're going to tell them to call me whether I was your loan officer or not.
Right.
Because and there again, we have that conversation and I may not be able to help them. But it may have been an appointed conversation they needed to have that day.
Yeah.
You know?
That's really, that's, I wish I had had this conversation. next, this is from personal experience. Like I told you, my first time I bought a house, we didn't have a great relationship with USAA, but we powered through it. What happens if you just like don't get along with your loan officer? Like if you're just not vibing?
I think it depends on where you are in the process.
If
you are to a point where you're past appraisal, you stick it out.
Yeah.
I keep going back to the realtor. And I just do because to me they're the most important person in the transaction.
And
I'll be honest, I've received calls from realtors that are like, "Hey, Erica, y'all are doing a bang up job on this loan, but Jackie's not feeling the love from you. I think it would be helpful to her if you'd reach out every 2 days and just, even though you know the process is going fine, reassure her it's going fine."
Okay. Yeah.
And that's I would, you know, I mean that's legitimate because which I used to get those a lot. I mean, and I do still every now and again, but I've you know, a loan officer, now I say, you know, how do you prefer to be communicated to? How often do you want to hear from me?
Yeah.
And I've learned that it may not necessarily be me they need to hear from. They just need to hear from somebody on my team. And if it's every 48 hours, then that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So I think go back to the realtor and say, hey, look, I know we're rocking along and we're halfway through, but I'm just, you know, I'm reaching out. Usually the borrower's going to tell the realtor anyway. So I'm reaching out to the person, they're not calling me back. And then usually that agent can make a call to the loan officer. And they just be candid like that. I know locally there's great lenders here and the real estate agents are top notch. So I would, in a local situation, I would just say, hey, you know, I'm having trouble. I don't feel like we're connecting. And that agent can have a conversation with the loan officer and usually correct that. Because a lot of times I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. That loan officer's being so results driven that they don't even realize that the customer's not feeling the love.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Because I get the same feedback sometimes. Like, I haven't heard from you. Yeah. And I'm like, that's because I'm plugging along and I've got 800 other million clients.
And I think if you're before appraisal, if you're in the early stages, and here's the thing, every company does things differently.
Yeah.
So one way you're going to really like and you may not like it. Somebody else, but if you're early on and you're still in the decision-making process, there's nothing wrong with making a change. There's never anything wrong with making a change, but I think if you do the investigation on the front end, you're going to know who you're going to work well with just by, are they calling me back?
Yeah.
Are they responding to my text? Or are they responding to my email? Now, I do want to say that it may not always be immediate because like you said, I mean, you know, usually with this kind of stuff, there's several people going on at the same time and not saying it should take 2 days to respond to anybody. That's not what I'm saying. But sometimes that communication may not be immediate. But if you're not hearing back from your loan officer or somebody on the team at all, mm-hmm. that's a problem. It's a red flag. And I don't think it's going to get any better unless you address it or change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was... I like that. And I think people kind of feel like locked into it, you they know, do. Once they've chosen. And so they're like... Well, dang, they got me on the hook.
Can I give a shameless plug for one more thing now? Because I've been hearing it a lot. Okay, so I actually talked to somebody the other day who had worked with two online lenders. And so just for anybody who doesn't know, we're in August of 2023 right now. And the mortgage industry is at probably the most difficult time it's seen in my career. So since 1998. And that even includes 2008. It is tough right now.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think you see that, well, what you see is a lot of originators who are struggling to stay in the business. I mean, mm-hmm. We all are.
Yep.
And I've heard of people charging $500 application fees. I've heard of people charging money to lock in a rate. I've heard of
lenders. You can
do that? Well, I mean, so here's what's going on. That lender is trying to get you to commit to
lock
using
in.
It so you won't go somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
So whatever the catch may be, in my personal opinion, you don't need to be using any lender who's requiring money from you.
To give you money.
I mean, like for an appraisal, yes, that's a fee that you're paying somebody to go do a service for you. But by that point, you've already committed to that lender.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having to pay to apply to online ABC mortgage company, if they want a $500 commitment fee from you to lock in a loan, you need to go somewhere else.
I have not heard that.
Oh,
it's so
it
crazy.
Happens. It happens. And you would think these companies have plenty of money. They have more money than anybody else in the industry. I don't know why they're... That's probably why.
Because they want more.
They want more commercials
want
on Super Bowl.
More.
Yeah, that's it.
That's always mm-hmm. it. More. Mm-hmm. They want more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's great. That's not something I heard
of.
And
I've heard of it, and I was shocked. And one person had already paid it. I mean, they were like, well, I've already paid. And I was like, look, if you don't want to work with them, think about this. If they need that much money to lock in your rate, how much, I mean, if you could get a better loan and the rate is...
$500
is nothing.
That's
over
a drop
30
in
year.
A bucket.
That's right. So, and I told her, I was like, look, I mean, if that's what you need to do, I mean, we can work this out to where I can make something work where we'll give you a $500 credit at
exactly.
some point. If it's going to save you... thousands of dollars down the road, what's the $500 down? And it's just that people don't, they're not informed. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They think that's normal and they're scared to ask questions.
Yes. I'm so happy you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow, look at this descriptive question. Any other general questions? okay, all right. Now I want to get into the divorce.
Yes,
stuff,
yes.
Which we kind of already talked about and I've talked about a little bit, but what is, I think you hear, like, I guess, nightmare stories,
I
and I'm probably the worst about perpetuating this, because it truly was
right.
horrible. And even though I had an amazing uh-huh. loan officer, an amazing realtor, the experience was
well, you were,
so intrusive and,
yes,
and
very
difficult, and I didn't feel like I was going at it alone, because I had a great
right.
women
yeah.
who were just,
right.
like, there with me and
yes.
a supportive family. But it was still so difficult. So, like, why, first off, like, why do people say, like, first off, your credit score is going to go down when you get divorced?
Yeah.
And which I guess it did, but I don't think it changed that much.
Well, I think a lot of that is assumption.
Yeah.
I also think, I mean, is the person you were at the most emotionally charged point in your life, probably.
Yeah.
So anything is going to seem bigger. I think that a lot of times people who tell you X, Y, and Z don't really know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like...
Especially when it comes to credit scoring, but I'm not even going down that because that could be a whole other podcast.
Oh my God. It really is a million podcasts.
But I would say don't listen to anybody but the professionals. And I know mm-hmm. like that we're in a TikTok world. I watch TikTok all the time. Honestly, I glean lots of cool information from the loan officers I follow on TikTok, but I see more that are inaccurate than I do accurate. You know, so the things to me, your credit score may not go down. It depends. But if you, let's say this, if you have, and I'm just going to throw out some scenarios. Is that okay?
Oh yeah, of course.
If you, all right. So if you are on a car loan together, if you have credit items that are joint credit, meaning you and your spouse are on the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And in that divorce decree, it says husband's going to handle the car payment.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, this debt is going to belong to him. If you're joint on that car, it's still reporting on your credit, whether he's responsible to pay it or not.
Yeah.
Okay. So if he's missing payments, you could have a situation there.
Oh, yeah.
you know, so a lot of it, same situation, same debt, let's say, with the divorce, through the proceeds, husband and wife agree to pay off these credit cards and close the joint accounts together,
mm-hmm.
which is common.
Yeah.
When you close credit cards, sometimes your credit scores go down.
Yep.
But it's not forever.
No, it bounces right back up.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, Credit Karma and whatever those companies are have done a great marketing job of getting the entire world obsessed with their credit scores.
Yeah.
What they don't tell them is they probably change daily.
They do.
What they don't tell them is that, you know, your consumer score is not the same as a mortgage pool.
Right.
Everybody is so over-focused on credit scoring. Mm-hmm. If you pay your bills on time, your credit score is going to be fine.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't pay your bills on time, and that's okay. Things are recoverable, but I think if people would step back and not be so over-focused on what these scoring apps are saying,
yeah,
a lot of that stress level when you're in these situations would come down.
Yeah.
The things that, like, I feel are important to talk about are qualifying for a loan. Let's say now that you are going through a divorce and child support,
mm-hmm.
or alimony. And yes. This is going to go either way, whether you're paying it or you're going to be receiving it.
Yeah.
When you qualify for a mortgage, if child support is part of the income that you're using to qualify, lenders are going to have a certain amount of time that they're showing receipt of that.
Got you. Okay.
So for some loans, it's 3 months. Or for loan products, it's 3 months. For some, it's six. For some, it's 12. It depends on the loan program you're using. In addition, and I was thinking about this when I knew I was coming to see you, unless something's changed in the past year, typically that child support's got to be court ordered or showing on the divorce. So if you and ex-hubby go make an agreement on the side that's not in that divorce decree and he's giving you $1,000 per month, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. If it's not showing legally that he owes it to you, a lender can't count it.
Yeah.
Okay? Even if you've got $1,000 coming in your bank account from him every month, in most cases, a lender's not going to accept that as qualifying income unless they have a decree that states that with it, or something coming from DHR that's showing
like an income withholding order.
Yes.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because I'm in like a couple of like divorce groups for the military, and then I'm in like the Army mom life, and something I see often is like just side agreements.
Yeah.
Just like you said, like and then normally they go awry, right? Because somebody falls on hard times, either party, it's like, hey, I need more child support. And they're like, well, I've been sending you $400 a month or whatever. And it's like, my answer almost every time is, go on the internet, look up your state's child support calculator.
That's right.
See how much they could be paying you, and then say, well, you could be paying me $780 a month, but you're sending me $400,
right?
And I need more,
right?
But like you said, that's still not income. That's basically just like a gift, and they can take it away at any moment.
Exactly.
And when you get into like divorce and family law, and I know why people in the military do it a lot, because they're like, well, we don't want to deal with it. We just want to get divorced, or we were never married,
right?
Never married, so we don't have to get a divorce, so we'll just do this child support on the side. That's not really helping anybody, including
the child. Yeah.
Because then when, you know, a new girl or a new boy whomever comes into the picture,
or their children.
I want you to be spending that $400 on me.
That's right.
You don't have a child support order.
That's right.
Make or take you to court.
I mean, in bad
you know,
happens.
I mean, that
I see it from where I sit a lot.
Girl,
as well.
That pettiness,
yeah,
gets people. And when somebody else enters the chat, that's when things get real messy.
That is the truth.
And I'm happy you brought that up because it's like,
I mean, so
you gotta
bottom
have
line,
it
just needs to be legal. I mean, it needs to be in your decree. Any sort of debts that you had together, the mortgage, the cars, the credit cards, all of those things need to be outlined on the divorce decree. Who's going to pay what?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if it's in your name, you owe it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I can show 12 months of payments that show you're not making it, your name's not on the account, which means you're going to have to call ex-hubby, say, hey, you know that car that you're paying every month that my name is on, will you send me 12 months bank statement showing where you're paying it so I can get a mortgage?
Yeah.
I've had it happen a couple of times where they were happy to do it, but more often than not, they are not on amicable terms like that.
And then, yeah, I mean, we could get into it, but I have had cases where the other spouse is like, I don't care, and I don't care if the house gets foreclosed
on. That's right.
Because I don't care about my financial situation.
That's
but
that
you
happens.
You care, so I'm going to just tank this investment.
Well,
so I'm not going to make payments on this house that you can't live in because I live in it, but I'm not going to pay the bills.
And then you're like, suffering the consequences for that with your credit.
It's sad,
and
it
happens.
It's like it's really abusive, and I think speaks to an abusive mentality.
Absolutely.
When somebody does
Absolutely.
That. But it happens a lot.
Yes.
It happens with car payments where it's like, well, I need the Suburban to carry the kids around. I have the kids most of the time. I need this $80,000 car.
Right.
I haven't worked in 10 years and I can't make payments on it.
Right.
So you need to make payments on
it.
And then somebody's like, well, I'm just not going to make payments on it.
Yeah.
So
it
like happens. When you get contentious and then it's like, you go to buy a house 2 years later when you remarry and your new spouse is like, well, I want to buy a house with you. And they're like,
so those
what happened to the family Suburban a couple years ago?
Yes.
You missed 8 months of payments.
I mean, and those are the kind of things you see in like the paying the child support to.
Yeah.
Because you know, if you owe child support, you're supposed to put it on the loan application and you know, sometimes it gets left off, but look, that's the other plug I'm gonna. Your lender finds out everything about you. Be upfront and honest up front, because the worst thing in the world for somebody is to get halfway through a process and then, oh, by the way, he owes $600 of child support every month. He marked on his application that he didn't, but I just see here with this most recent pay stub, his wages are garnished. Well, now you've got a whole situation, and you may have a debt ratio issue that you didn't have 10 minutes ago. So those type of things, I think when you're coming out of a divorce, your financial picture may have looked one way 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're receiving child support, or you're paying child support, or you're splitting assets, or you're paying equity, all of those things change a financial picture for a lender.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just assume, I bought a house at this price 2 years ago, I can qualify for this now. And I've seen this just in the market in the past 6 months with the way the prices have risen. And now that interest rates have come up, people I made loans to 4 years ago who are selling their house because they're making great money, and they want to go buy again at that same price point. Well, they didn't account for the fact that rates are 4.5% higher than they
were. Good luck.
And so now that's changed. And they're like, but you gave me money for a $350,000 house in 2021, and now you're telling me I can only afford
$180,000. Yeah.
And I'm like, did you consider this has changed in your financial situation? And where rates were 2 to 3.5%, now they're 6 to 7. So those are just all of these things are factors. And so that's why I say just be prepared ahead of time.
Yeah.
Before you find something on the internet and fall in love with a house, it's so important to do the footwork for your finances first.
Yeah.
And then start looking at the house.
Yeah.
The other thing that I see in my line of work is the timing issue.
Yeah.
With divorces. And so I think when I talk about this, it's not going to make sense because I don't really know how to verbalize what I'm saying, but you can help me because you're an attorney.
We're good for it. Let's go.
Okay. So I'm thinking like somebody will call and say, hey, I'm going through a divorce. We're still married. I want to buy a house. But our divorce is not final. Now, sometimes you can do this. Mm-hmm. And my first response is always, you need to talk to your divorce attorney first.
Yeah.
Because I think depending on the relationship, mm-hmm. which I also just need to say, I mean, when money's involved, that can change overnight. Oh. We, if you've been through it, you know.
Oh, yeah, money.
All of a sudden, you know, everything is fine and we are having the most amicable split ever to, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't even think of the thoughts I'm thinking when money gets involved. It happens.
It does.
Just unfortunately, like you see the best and worst of people.
When somebody else romantic comes into the picture, it's the same thing. It just...
Yeah. So, yes, you can buy a house when you're in the middle of a divorce, but depending on what state you're in, and if you're in a joint property state or not, there are a lot of legal situations that could evolve from buying real estate when you're still legally married. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely say talk to your divorce attorney first. 100%. That's always the first thing out of my mouth because, again, if you have a divorce that you've signed and it's gone before a judge and you need that house you owned with your spouse to be in his name and you've got to deed it out of yours to qualify,
yeah,
it's not your best thing to go make a contract on a house that needs to close in 30 days when you're still waiting for the judge to finalize your divorce decree.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Now you've made a commitment to someone to buy their house, but your final divorce is contingent on a judge signing off on it, and you have no control over that.
Yeah.
I see. This is the real life situation, sticky stuff.
I can 100% mm-hmm. see that.
I've seen like some divorce attorneys, like in Alabama, you can buy when you're still married under a purchase money mortgage. And my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is as long as that person, the spouse, never resides one day in the property, technically you can purchase it and you're okay. Is this right?
I'm not an expert.
Okay.
I can tell you, I'll be trying to do whatever's best for my client.
Absolutely.
So if my client says,
I slept there last night,
that cheating SOB
right.
takes his girlfriend over there.
Right.
Well, guess what, girly girl?
Yeah.
We're fighting for that house. We're going to try to get it. And I don't care how much he owes on
right.
it. Because we're getting half of it. And we'll sell it.
And so for that particular reason.
For me.
For that reason, though, is why I don't know that it's always advisable to buy real estate before your divorce is final.
Yeah.
Because you have situations, and I've seen them come up just like that. The other one would be, which I think I told you, you kind of gave me this idea the other day, was what happens when you refinance and you need to pay equity to the spouse that's moving out of the house?
Yeah.
You know, that's something that is a refinance. So now mm-hmm. you're refinancing a mortgage and you've got to, y'all decide that you're going to give the husband or the wife X amount of dollars. But you've got to get that money from somewhere, and your idea to get that money is to refinance the house and pull it out.
Yeah.
Which you can totally do, and that's typically what happens. But, mm-hmm. but what people don't understand is a lender on what's called a cash-out refinance, which means if you're doing anything other than paying off the existing mortgage, so if you're getting money to pay out a spouse or you're paying off debt,
mm-hmm.
we can lend up to 80% of that appraised value.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking, you know, we owe X on the house and we have all this equity, and that's what that spouse is thinking. Okay, we've got $100,000 worth of equity. Let's just say we got a $200,000 house and a $100,000 mortgage. So there's $100,000 left and we're going to split it 50-50.
Yep.
The lender can't lend up to $200,000.
Yeah.
The lender's usually capped at lending 80%. So now we're at $180,000. And I think sometimes there is frustration and confusion because people just assume they can borrow the total amount of the house when the only time that's really going to happen is if you're selling the asset.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, financially, I guess it makes sense for risk and stuff.
Yeah.
Like
well, and I, yeah, it, from the lender's standpoint. So
for
I think
sure.
just a lot of times, and now That doesn't mean that either party should necessarily, quote, settle for less. But what mm-hmm. it means is you may have to find other avenues to bridge that gap between what you were able to borrow out of the refinance and what you've got to pay the spouse.
Yes.
And I've seen that many several times, I'm sure. Where, you know, let's just say $50,000 was the agreement, the house appraised, they were able to get $35,000 out of the refinance to give the spouse, but they still got to pull 15 from somewhere.
So, yeah.
So those are the kind of things I think just hearing and knowing to think through and, hey, talk with my attorney, find out, you know, obviously you're not going to know what your house is worth.
Yeah.
But, I mean, cause unless you're just an appraiser or an expert, but to make sure it just makes sense. Like, do I have the ability? Where am I going to find the rest of that money?
Mm-hmm.
Have I got it? Have I not? Because if you don't and you know that, then these are conversations that are better had on the front end than once all this is going on.
For sure.
And then, because if you still, this is the other thing, if you're still legally married, when you go to refinance that house and you sign the stuff, he's got to sign the mortgage.
Yes.
Because and he signs the closing disclosure that shows how much money you're getting back, sister. So keep this in mind, because they have to if you're still legally married. It's just you mm-hmm. always need to consult with your divorce attorney. And I have a couple of divorce attorneys that kind of refer me loans when yes. this kind of thing happens, because I've walked through it. And I have to talk to the divorce attorneys, like, because honestly, I mean, your average person doesn't understand all
yeah,
this
and you're
or
like,
the legalities.
Where are they? What's their settlement looking like?
Like what's it looking stuff? Like? Yeah. Because, you know, do I need to move forward with this? You know, are y'all going to be back and forth in court? I mean, are you going to be going back and back 100%. And back and back? Because if they're not on the same page and you've got to do mediation or whatever it is, and we're not anywhere near a settlement,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm over here looking with a 45-day interest rate lock. Yes. What's happening when your legal situation is going on for 3 months?
Yeah, exactly.
There are so many different scenarios in that mm-hmm. that it's just always best before I think you just pick up the ball and say, hey, I'm going to do this, is just confirm with your divorce attorney, do I have your blessing?
Yeah,
I mean, like, are you okay with me taking these steps to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. The best thing... when you said that, like mm-hmm. the spouse is going to have to sign on the mortgage.
Yeah.
When they did my deed for uh-huh. when I bought my house,
right.
you know how it has the description?
Yeah,
it's like
a married
Jacqueline Diane Warren, an unmarried
yes,
woman. I
yes.
was like, and I laughed and made a note. I was like, I don't know. I made a joke about being uh-huh. a witch or something uh-huh. like that uh-huh. because it was almost Halloween. Uh-huh. And then the guy selling me the house uh-huh. was also divorced. And uh-huh. he and his dad were there. And he was like, well, don't worry, my copy also says unmarried man.
Exactly.
Like, there we go.
Yeah.
We're just one
it's like, if you start wearing the label that
I know,
day.
We're like, yeah. we're just one loser selling a house
right,
to another.
Right, I know, it's crazy. It is so crazy like that, though, it's true.
Oh, all right, girl, you ready to get into some Am I the Asshole?
Yes, I love this. Let's do it.
Okay, I was kind of looking through one. I think, oh my God, this is going to be a funny one. They're all funny to me. I love these. Okay, so I'm going to read it to you and then I guess we'll discuss. So, am I the asshole for not wanting to settle with someone who's already been through a divorce? So I think that's both of us. We've both been divorced too. All right.
Mm-hmm.
This girl, female, 23, which is like so
way
young.
Too young.
That's
yes.
so young. You don't need to be talking about settling down.
No.
And myself, male, 23, have had a weird past. When I was in high school, me and this girl used to mess around in high school. Oh my God. mostly through text and video chats. That's how you know they're in their 20s.
I was about to say, the age of the right there.
I'm sorry,
right.
what? How right. do you mess around their video chat?
I don't know.
With the occasional public meetup hookup? I don't know.
Ooh.
sir, that sounds illegal. That sounds illegal.
I'm in really chat.
That's how you catch a case.
Right.
It's supposed to be a private meetup hookup, sir.
Oh,
it's supposed
me.
To be
oh, me.
Private meetup hookup.
Oh, me.
Time goes by. I never fully engaged the thought of being anything but said it, and she flipped on me for about a week. I don't really understand what that means. Oh, I guess he told her that he didn't want to be anything.
He doesn't want to be committed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they
Shocker.
Stopped talking.
Right.
Well, 23, not wanting to be committed.
Right, okay.
Hello.
If I'd have married at 23, I'd have been married and divorced 16 times by the time I was 30.
I was married when I was like
so
24.
Fickle. Really? Oh, I, you know.
I was basically a child bride.
I was so fickle.
Okay, so freshman year of college rolls around, and I get a Snapchat from her again, and we again start to chat and flirt like nothing happened. Oh, 20s. Main issue this time, come see me. She's 4 hours away and going to play coy. I'm good. That's stupid. All right, long story short, she gets mad. I won't even attempt to see her. We're not a thing. She stops texting me. Life goes on. She gets married at age 20 or 21. Holy cow. And then gets divorced and moves back into town. Okay. We see each other on Tinder, and she wants to pick back up where we left off. But she doesn't know. I knew she has an ex-husband. She keeps calling me babe and telling her family about me. Am I the asshole for not wanting to be with her?
No.
I mean, no.
She's covered in red flags, dude.
Yeah, this sounds... I'm like, they just sound so young. This,
they do.
I mean, 24.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I just can't imagine growing up in this time and having to deal with relationships with the way all that is anyway. I
really and Snapchat can't. And Tinder. And
well, just all of that. It's so much.
It's like oppressive almost.
I mean, it's so much.
Yeah.
They don't even know who they are yet.
I don't think he's the asshole for not wanting to
either.
Commit.
I don't either.
Like, it is a little weird that she's...
Well, I mean, and my question is why do you keep going back to this?
Yeah, okay, that's what I said. You know, I'm like a professional ghoster. Like, yeah. I don't care.
I'm a serial texter. Like, yeah, I'll text and act like I want to go out with you all the time, but when it comes down to it, I probably really don't.
I won't.
I'm like, yeah, I like to flirt, and this is fun. And but then it's like, okay, can we go to dinner? I'm like, maybe, I don't know.
I successfully put off going on a date with a man for like 7 months one time.
Really?
And I was just like, no, I'm busy. And then like every 3 months, he would like send me a message and be like, I want to take you out. And I was like, I've got stuff going on. And then finally, one day I was like, all right, you can take me out to dinner.
I don't think he's an asshole at all.
I don't think so either. I mean, I think just
I really
mature.
Maturity. I just think, I mean, they obviously have a little connection. I mean, there's nothing wrong with admitting that.
Yeah, when you're in your 20s.
But yeah, here's the thing. If you're not going out on dates and you're not seeing each other and spending personal time together, whatever it is in your head that you have isn't real.
Yeah, I agree. It's just made up.
It's how you want it to look in your head, which, I mean, I'm totally guilty of that. But, you know, I mean, I can write a Nicholas Sparks novel like there's nobody business in my head. Not a problem. Oh my gosh, my therapist told me one time, she's like, girl, you need to remember, you don't know people's thoughts and they don't know yours. So the next time you try to assign thoughts to somebody and start writing that Nicholas Sparks novel in your head, just remember you have no idea what they're thinking, good or bad. And I was like, okay.
That's very true. That is true. I guess, I mean, like, I can envision things happening, but then I'm like, oh, I don't have time for all that. Is one of your children?
Yes. Hey, sweetie, I'm recording this podcast, remember? Child.
The life of a mom. Okay, I have one more. Okay. That one was super
short.
That
was weird, yeah.
Okay, am I the asshole for wanting to divorce after 1 year of marriage? I think this is going to be interesting. I, 29-year-old female, married to my husband, 30-year-old male, after about 2 years of dating. Okay, so dated for 2 years,
right.
Then got married.
Right.
Okay, and you're... In your late 20s, early 30s, I feel like
that's when I'm married.
Soon after our engagement, I realized what a huge mistake I was making, but I felt like it was too late for me.
Girl.
Oh, I hate that so much. Coming from a conservative Indian family, I really felt there was no going back after it had been announced to everyone. Now, a little over a year into the marriage, I feel so trapped. I think about divorce on a daily basis. I've learned so much about this man that I don't agree with. People close to me have noticed he isn't the same guy I fell for. He was always a homebody, but I do everything by myself. I started making excuses for him to the rest of my family because he doesn't show up for anything. Relatable. He really believes he has no other obligation to maintaining this relationship. I have to beg him to go on trips, not because we can't afford it, but because he doesn't want to go anywhere. Ew. I added that. I had so many talks about what I expect from him, but still there are no changes. I don't know how much longer I can do this. This is just the tip of the iceberg. There are lots of other reasons for my unhappiness. That breaks my heart.
Well, I have mixed thoughts on that. I think
this is so sad.
I mean, one side, which, I mean, I'm a Christian, so I, you know, to me, when you marry, those vows you make are to the Lord. And however, I mean, if she's not, then you can't bring that into that.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know, I think a year is not enough, is not a lot of time. But obviously there's trouble in the marriage. So.
And I think your first.
That's the hardest
that
time.
Kind of sucks. It's hard, but you're also supposed to be like in that little honeymoon phase.
And but she clearly identified issues that.
Before they even got married.
I mean, I don't think she's the asshole, because sitting where I sit now, I just think before you have children and bring anybody else into this relationship, you are best off. I mean, if I were a counselor, my suggestion would be you need to go to counseling and see if you guys can get on the same page where your expectations are on the same page.
Absolutely.
Which it doesn't sound like they are, which are probably conversations that should have been had way before now. But
yes.
you just go in blind.
And
you
I think
hindsight's 2020.
Hindsight is 2020. And then like cultural expectations, like
yes.
she said, she's from a conservative Indian family.
Yeah.
So that
it's pressure.
Cultural, societal, it's pressure, like get married, have kids.
That's right.
And it sounds like he just wanted to check the boxes and not have like a fulfilling partnership, marriage, all of that.
Right.
I mean, obviously, we don't know his side of the story.
Sure.
But, yeah, I don't think she's an asshole. I think
I don't think she is either.
She felt pressured to follow through with something. And I'm so lucky. I did not have that. I just dove right into my marriage.
Same.
And was like, I'm going to do it. But I have a very supportive, loving family.
Right.
As crazy as my childhood was, they were just like, it's okay. We're going to love you either way.
Well, and I did, like you saying that, like about the unconditional love part. I don't feel like she's looking for ways to change. You know, it seems to me like I want this and he wants this and we can't. You know, I saw this on a TikTok or somebody told me this, or I saw it, I think. And the person said, I wake up every morning and say to my spouse, how can I show you I love you today? And
like
it
that.
Stays in my head, because I think about how many marriages would be better if the goal is, how can I serve you today, instead of how can I be served? And when you read that, I just saw the me, and the he, and it wasn't like a we.
There wasn't a we.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe a symptom of just being married for a year.
Yeah.
I mean, and they've been together for 2 years, which is, you know, I mean,
I was
with my assessment for less than that before we got married. Like, I was
with mine for a long time, but I still don't know that I ever felt like we were a we. But I think a lot of that was my emotional immaturity and unhealthiness too. So
I think I felt like we were, maybe that's it. But she's, the answers on here are all like,
I don't think she's an asshole.
I don't think she's an asshole either. I think you just gotta say, at this point, she's kind of at a fork in the road,
that's right.
You know, and it's this way, like, do I want to get out of this marriage and kind of reset, do some self-work,
right?
Hopefully find a partner if that's what she wants to build the marriage that she wants. Because everybody has an idea in their head.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would be wise to take next steps to see if it's salvageable.
Yeah, so, go to counseling.
I think
and
for me, like, when I was, you know, my marriage struggled for a long time before we divorced.
Yeah.
But as a person, I would want to know that I did what I could to make sure it was not going to work. Like, I wouldn't want to look back, especially knowing how your family is and that you don't want to disappoint the family.
Right.
I would need to be able to say, hey, look, I talked to him. Hey, can we go to counseling?
I tried
he didn't
so
want
hard.
To, or we went and met with somebody and we just feel like it's not going to work, instead of just throwing your hands up and saying, I'm done.
Yes.
But again, at the end of the day, she's not fulfilled.
Yes, absolutely. And you do deserve
which
to
I don't think
life,
you just
you know?
Give up on that either. But I think that, I don't know, I think she should go to counseling either way, for
the key
herself
thing
or
is,
with him.
Don't have any kids.
That's right.
If you're in that situation,
do not bring kids into the mix.
Do not bring children
into
the mix.
That's
I mean, that is They don't fix marriages.
Yeah, and
they do not. When people say, oh, well, wait, no.
They don't deserve the turmoil that's going to come from that either.
Absolutely. Yeah. The children do not fix marriages. No. You're 100%.
That's right.
They are children. They're innocent
parties. That's right.
Don't put that burden on them.
Mm-mm.
And plus,
mm-mm.
just from a practical standpoint, yeah. they do not make things easier.
They don't make things easier.
Like I told you, I told you earlier about my easiest time was when it was just me and my infant child.
Right,
and I was like, I'm living my peak life because it's easy to take care of this tiny little human, but no.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's I mean, like, thank God for them because, like, my kids are my life now. You
know,
I can't imagine being divorced and not having my children because thank God for that marriage because he brought me those children.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for that. But I think that's one thing, but when you just don't go say, hey, we're going to go have a baby because this is going to be fun and it's going to make everything better because, like you said, it makes everything
I think it's difficult. Always...
It just layers up the problems
I was
in
never
the marriage.
One of those women who was like, I just want to get married and have a bunch of babies. Uh-huh. Like, that's not me. That's not who I was. And I'm definitely not like that now.
Uh-huh.
So that was never a thing for me, but I see it.
Yeah.
I see it all the time.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, why does now, you know, the kids are getting older. Now my husband wants a divorce. And it's like, yeah, babe.
What happens when you don't nurture the marriage?
That's right. I mean, it's like, you know, you wanted a bunch of kids mm-hmm. and you were using him because you wanted kids and stability. And he was using you because you wanted somebody to take care of the home. And y'all were both using each
That's
other.
Right.
And you weren't.
Yeah.
It wasn't a partnership.
That's right.
It was like a contract. It was like an agreement.
You couldn't have said that better.
And
that's
it's
so true.
Yeah, because that whole idea, and I know some people are like, it's not a partnership, it's a marriage. I'm like, first off,
it is a partnership.
It's a partnership, and just simply put, like in legal terms, a partnership,
you're both
equally.
Level. That's right.
Like, supposed to be pouring into the partnership.
You have to.
And you're both responsible
that's
for
right.
taking the best care of
each other
and
absolutely.
Nurturing it and growing
absolutely.
It and marriages like that. Well, I wanted a husband and a family and I wanted someone to cook me stuff. That's not a partnership.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I learned, well, I learned so much, but and I was guilty of this, and this has been a later in life thing that I'm really trying to focus on within the past, I would say 5 years. Intentionality mm-hmm. is so important in your marriage, and when you're young And I can't imagine what it's like for this generation because, you know, I'm two generations before. And back then, you know, it seems like it's for the pictures, it's for the dress, it's for the parties, it's for the Instagram post.
Oh, yeah.
All of, you know, there's a marriage there. There's a contract or a vow or a covenant, however you want to say it, that you made to pour into that person and to love that person. And if you're not intentional with that, I mean, especially when you start having kids.
Oh, yeah. It's easy
it's
to let
so
it.
It's so easy to, like, you know, I can remember, my son was first, and, like, it's
always.
Sort of like, he's the baby boy. I mean, to this day, I mean, he's my baby boy. It's different. The girls will tell you he is treated different. He is it's like, I got this baby boy, and truthfully, probably shouldn't even say this. All that affection that should have been going to my husband
mm-hmm.
was now poured into this baby boy that I had because he was this fat little snuggly, oh my gosh, I can't get enough of you.
Perfect little baby.
Perfect baby that has mama's heart. And that happens whether it's a boy or a girl.
Yes.
But especially being a mom, and you know, I mean, when you're parenting, especially if you're working outside of the home, well, I think ladies that stay at home have it harder than the ones that work out of the side of home because they never get away. I mean, I think the pressure they put on themselves is probably just up to here.
Yes.
To have everything perfect. I
let that go a long time ago.
I would beat myself
I've been
up,
working
though,
since
if I were
was born.
Same. I worked through all three of mine.
Yeah.
But there's just the pressure either way of doing all that. There's so little time for the marriage, especially now in the go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is, there is no be still. There is no rest.
Yeah.
You have to nurture a marriage because even the best, I think the best marriages, if you're not intentional with that, I mean, look, the world is just nasty right now.
Oh, it's so.
And with distractions and deception.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many ways that things can creep into that marriage if you're not intentional with fighting for it
mm-hmm.
and being on the same page about what you're going to do to nurture each other.
Yeah. I agree. I think in a situation like this, I don't know, I would just, you know.
I don't think she's at fault regardless of what decision she makes.
It sounds like she didn't want to get married, and she went ahead and got married. And he probably didn't really want to be married either, but his family's pressuring him to be married.
Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like.
And that makes me really sad because I'm like, this is the year of our Lord, 2023.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to be doing this anymore.
No. The Indian culture is very, I mean, they're very specific and very family focused with that too, though, aren't they? So I'm sure that pressure was really high.
Look, my dad, bless his heart, I've shared this on the podcast before, but on the day I got married, we did it in a park, and there was like a horse and a little carriage that like carried me to the ceremony. And okay, so we were like, I was very nervous, but it was okay. And everybody left, and it was just me and my dad. And then we got in there, and we're like driving, but the horse and carriage couldn't make the left hand turn, so we had to go straight into the parking lot. And like, I had that fight or flight.
Yeah, it's a fight or flight moment.
And I was like, I kind of want to keep going. And my dad, I didn't say it out loud, but my dad was like, I think he saw I was nervous.
Yeah.
And he was like, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
I have so many friends that have told me the same story.
He said, we can get in the car right now.
Yeah.
He was like, you don't have to do anything. It doesn't matter. And I was like,
all these people are here.
Signed this marriage license already. And I was like, it does matter. All these people here. But I was like, that's the kind of energy I always want.
Same.
For my
I'm fight or flight for
like,
everything.
I was like, I just need my daughter to know, I'll go with you.
That's right.
I'll hold your hand all the way to the finish line he did and still be sitting there and saying, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
That's
we can walk right back down this aisle now, you know? I was like,
God. Yeah, the societal pressures for that stuff. I don't know. It's just kind of like kids these days, bless their hearts, they can't win.
They can't win. Because they're caught with older generations.
Yeah.
You need to get married. You need to settle down. Well, guess what? That model doesn't really work anymore. You can scarcely survive on one income now. Both people have got to work. It's very hard to have two working parents.
And the truth is, not everybody's called to be married.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
I mean, and it doesn't mean that you're less than if you're not, or that you're better than if you are. It's just, that's not everybody's path.
I know. And the longer I'm single and I grooving, I'm in my own little groove in my own house.
Yeah.
And I don't have, it's just me and my daughter.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what? I like this energy. Now, maybe when she's grown and she's older, I might be like, all right, I could have someone else around. But now I'm like, I don't even want someone else to come in here and disrupt
the flow.
My vibe. I'm like, you got a good thing going.
That's right.
Even on a bad day, I'm like, I have so much freedom to feel and express and just if I have a hard day at work, I can just go home and say, you know what, I'm gonna watch whatever I want
to
watch on TV.
I'm gonna have
girl dinner.
That's
you don't have to be on.
I think the longer I go, I'm finally comfortable with being alone and being me. Like, I never knew who I was. I mean, at all. I mean, obviously at the end of my marriage, less so than before, but I think that I'd always had an identity crisis until I got divorced. And now I am so certain of who I am.
Yeah.
I want to remarry and I want to, I want a second chance to be a wife. I do. I have big ideas.
You want
to
be like a stepmom? Maybe cool stepmom to older kids or something?
I love me some teenagers, so I don't know. I mean, my kids are almost grown. I could.
Y'all heard it here. She loves teenagers.
I do. I love teenagers. They are my groove. Because I am one. I mean, in my head, I still am one, you know?
I know.
But the longer I go, the one thing that I think is so awesome is that it is so apparent to me that, I think when you're young, you have this dream of marriage, and it's it's distorted. It's not reality.
Oh, it's
but once you've been divorced, you know the good and the bad and the ugly, and the good is really good, and the bad is really bad, and the ugly is way more ugly than you could ever imagine.
Yeah,
but I know now, if I was, I, I'm not going to just remarry to remarry.
Exactly.
I'm not going to remarry to not be alone. I don't want to die alone.
Yeah.
But if that's what the Lord's intended for me, I'm going to live a great life doing it.
Yes. That's exactly how I feel.
If he wants me to be remarried again, he will bring the man that makes it so apparent to me. Mm-hmm. This is my spirit mate, because it's going to look nothing like what Erica ever picked before because the Lord did it. You know?
I love that mentality. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't even think I'm going to go out looking. I don't want to get married. I don't plan on getting married again. So I already recognize it's going to take a very specific type of man to fulfill my needs, which are, you're not going to live in my home.
And
you can be around all the time, but you're not going to live here.
Absolutely. You can spend
the weekend, but you're not going to be here during the week when I'm working and I want to do my own thing.
Right.
And yeah, I recognize that's a hard, hard sell for a lot of people. I don't want to be married. I don't care about it. I'm just like, we can both do our own thing.
See, I just think it's beautiful. Like, to me, that freedom, when you finally get to that, now listen, it's hell getting there. It was hard for me. I mean, I do agree. But when you do, and you know, hey, I'm going to be okay.
You're comfortable.
It is okay. Yeah. I'm okay. Like, to me, there's nothing better.
Yeah.
Because I'm free to make that decision.
Yes. I think you're...
I don't have to make the one I think you want me to make.
Yes.
Or somebody else wants me to make. Mm-hmm. Or mom or dad or the family or whoever. It's
yours. You're doing it for you. Yes.
And I think, I don't know, I just think that ends up being what's best. Mm-hmm. You know? Because like you said, if you're supposed to, you'll know and I'll know. And I mean, marriage is not to complete a person. I mean...
Yeah, I feel like when people say that, it makes it almost like
you're enmeshed. Closure. Well, you're enmeshed. That is emotionally unhealthy, guys. I mean, look at me like I'm a therapist. You're enmeshed. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know.
Listen, I have also been through a lot of therapy. Yeah. And I'm like, no, you're right. You don't want completing each other.
I don't want to complete anybody. I want you to be a whole person, and I want me to be a whole person.
And I want us to make each other better.
And that marriage, I'm gonna look if I can't be with a man that's gonna glorify God by us being together, I will be alone until I die.
Yeah,
because that's what the marriage is for. And if I'm not that to that person, and they're not that to me, mm-hmm. it's not gonna end well.
It's not worth it.
So why do it?
Why it's not worth the pain?
It's not. I mean, and that's discipline. I mean, that's a discipline and the intentionality. It's not worth pouring all that into mm-hmm. if you can't do it that way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. All right. Well, we've come to the end.
This has been so fun.
I know. I feel like this is, I do like short educational episodes sometimes, and then I do interviews. And this is such a good mix of both. Like, I've learned so much from you. So,
thank you.
I probably needed to do this a while ago, but I hope everybody gets a lot out of it.
Me too.
So, okay. Tell people where they can find you.
Okay. So I am on Facebook, Erica, E-R-I-K-A, Mackin, Westcott, W-E-S-T-C-O-T-T. Instagram, Erica Westcott. I work with Movement Mortgage. So you can Google Movement Mortgage, Erica Westcott. Cell phone, 256-441-0922 or erica.westcott@movement.com. And I'm happy to answer questions. Look, call me. I love to talk. I mean, this.
I feel like we talked about it earlier, but I just want to just double tap this part is that you're an excellent educator. You give, like you said, you love coaching and building people up. And I think that radiates from you. Like, as a person,
I just want to add value. So, like, you don't have, I mean, like, if you have a question about a mortgage, you don't need to use, I mean, I'm not saying call me because you want to do business with me. If I can add value to you by answering a question for you, I am more than happy to do that.
Like me, when I ran into your office one day, and I said, Erica, what is a HELOC? I need money for my house.
Right. Well, see, look at what that sparked.
I know.
That's so cool.
All right, well, I'll put all your contact info in the details, and just thank you so much. This was wonderful. All right. I really hope y'all enjoyed this episode. I learned so much from Erica, and I hope you do too. So head over to Facebook and Instagram and give her a follow. And as always, you know, you can follow me on Instagram. I also have a TikTok now, but it's kind of random. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. Bye.